Hello, Star Trek fans, and welcome to the Rebinge Star Trek DS9 podcast. My name is Kim.
And my name is James.
And we are watching Deep Space Nine from the beginning, one episode at a time. Welcome back to the podcast. We are on Season 1, Episode 4 of Deep Space Nine. The title of this episode is Babel, originally aired January 24th, 1993. Before we get started, were there any mistakes from the previous podcast that we need to correct?
No, it was perfect.
One thing I wanted to mention is that you hinted at some marital strife between Miles and Keiko in the last episode,
yes,
saying that they maybe shouldn't have been married.
That is correct.
So I went back and I reviewed all of the episodes that Keiko appeared in. I was surprised that there weren't that many. And I saw no real evidence of strife apart from the two things that we talked about. One was on Data's Day, that episode where Keiko has cold feet before they get married.
Yeah, it was the Data's Day was the one I was thinking of. That's the reason why I said they shouldn't get married. Clearly, she wasn't sure of this whole thing.
Oh, okay. Because the only other thing that really happened was the other thing we talked about, which was when Miles was taken over by alien beings. And again, that's really something that you have to expect as a member of Starfleet.
Yeah, that's just a hazard of the job.
Anything else?
No, it's perfect.
Okay, let's go on to this episode.
Sure.
So in the cold open, someone is pounding on a window, some kind of alien, we don't know who he is. Miles is on the other side of the window saying, "Save your energy, we'll have you out of there as soon as possible." That seems to appease the people that appear to be trapped.
Yeah, I think it's Miles just messing with people. I think he has an evil sense of humor, and he likes locking people in the airlocks and going, "Oh yeah, really, we can't let you out."
No, they're really trapped. Miles walks over to two people who I can only assume are non-player characters. They don't have names, they don't have lines.
Definitely.
They're working on an open panel, and he says to them, "Try rerouting the power coupling. I'm sure that was very helpful."
Did you notice it's also Worker Man Miles as well?
It is Worker Miles again. He's back. The sleeves are rolled up, so he's obviously working hard.
Do you think Miles drives the NPCs crazy with helpful advice like, "Have you tried turning it off and on again?"
It's possible. I had a person stand behind me one time and read a manual to me when I was trying to track down a database error. It's not helpful, I can tell you that. Okay, a short alien taps Miles on the shoulder. This is Captain Jaheel. And he tells Miles that he's been waiting for 2 days for someone to adjust his ship's antimatter flow converter so he can disembark. Miles says they've gotten behind in their maintenance schedule and these people have been stuck in the airlock for over an hour, so he needs to help them first.
So basically, Miles is running a Jiffy Lube in space.
A giant Jiffy Lube, for sure. It seems that everyone just flies in, Miles has to fix their ship, and he also has to fix the station because everything's broken there, and then they leave.
Yeah, so he's running a Jiffy Lube and he's understaffed. Okay.
Yeah, as far as we know, he's the only one who does anything. He's the only one with his sleeves rolled up.
Oh, I have another theory here. Do you think he could be one of those managers or employees who wants to keep everything to themselves and doesn't actually delegate anything? So he's trying to fix every single thing rather than giving it to his other staff.
It's possible. And we did establish earlier that this is a leadership podcast.
Yeah.
And yes, and Miles maybe needs to learn to delegate and empower some of the people who report to him so that he doesn't have to do absolutely everything.
That's good advice.
Yes. Well, yes, he might even just need a vacation, for example.
Yeah. Or maybe his NPCs are the F team. All the really competent engineers and the rest of them are actually on the Enterprise or doing cool things in exploration.
It's possible that this is not, you know, the best posting you could get. And so you've got all the lesser capable engineers.
Yeah.
All right. Captain Jaheel isn't interested in the stories of the Fixer Upper Space Station. He doesn't care. He's got a shipment he needs to deliver. This dude isn't amused and he kind of insults Miles before leaving. And you know this guy's trouble. We're going to see him again.
Oh, yeah.
Miles gets a call from Dax saying there's something wrong with the lab, so he grabs his worker briefcase, which is like an old school metal briefcase. I assume it's got Miles' important tools in it. He heads to the lab and he finds that she's standing outside because there's a giant buzzing noise going on inside.
So Miles has to even go and fix the air conditioners or the air vents. I mean,
I don't think it's the air conditioner. I'm not sure what it is. They say a bunch of Star Trek science-y things, which I'm sure means something to someone. But what I did notice is they're in that lab where she was working on the orb. Remember the orb from the pilot?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And I'm wondering if maybe it's just the migraine trigger making this noise. Because, you know, noises can trigger migraines too.
Oh, so the orb makes annoying noises as well as inducing migraines visually. Excellent.
I don't know. I have no evidence, but where is that thing?
I don't know. It hasn't been mentioned for
mentioned for a couple episodes.
So at the end of the day, her PC basically has a bad power supply, and that's Miles' problem as well.
Miles fixes the problem with the sound, but as soon as he fixes that problem, the lights go out. The place is such a dump.
That was pretty funny. I can kind of relate to Miles because I've been in those situations where I've been the only person on app support and just everything starts breaking.
Yeah, it's never one thing.
Yeah, you're the only person who can fix them, or the only person there who can fix them, and it's just one thing after the other.
Yeah.
And you're like, what did I do to deserve this?
Right, because we go right into the next problem, which is Kira in Ops, and she's complaining about the navigation computer being offline for 3 days. She's annoyed because she asks for one star chart, but she gets another, and that makes me think of the early days of Google Maps and Apple Maps, where you would get a completely made-up route to your destination.
Oh, as we used to call them, Google Goose Chases.
Miles is busy crawling around on the floor trying to fix things, and he's yawning. And Kira says, hey, maybe you need some sleep. And he said he'd settle for 5 minutes of peace and quiet. But of course, as soon as you say something like that, something else goes wrong. So Miles gets another complaint from right behind him. Cisco has taken what I think is a coffee cup out of the replicator. And he complains to Miles that he still hasn't fixed them. So I guess there's something wrong with his coffee. And Miles very sarcastically says, oh, you're absolutely right, sir. I knew I'd forgotten something. Can't have the operations chief sitting around daydreaming when there's work to be done. So he's a little testy and Cisco looks confused.
Oh, he is very crabby and being sarcastic. It's turning into a great day for him. Although I will point out, why is your operations chief fixing the vending machines? I mean, I've worked in technical environments. We don't usually have the lead engineers fixing the vending machines.
It's the main form of sustenance. It's not like they're getting a candy bar from a vending machine.
I'm sorry. Yeah, you're right. It's an advanced
vending machine. It is an advanced vending machine.
It is nice, though, that in their work environment, they have them on free vend, so you don't have to put quarters in.
It would be great to just turn around and order anything and have it just appear there. That would be awesome.
Yeah, it really
would. Especially if it was good. Who knows if it was good. Okay, so now Miles is working on something. He's like underneath an open panel somewhere and he's mumbling to himself. And he's also on his own. So he's left ops. I don't know where he is. This is after a commercial break. He's saying that he should have transferred to a cargo drone where there would be no whining people, which seems like a good idea. But I think that would have made Keiko even less happy.
Oh, yeah. There'll be lots of people on the cargo drone.
Like Cisco lying to Jake. There'll be tons of kids there. Oh, no, there's only one and you can't talk to him.
I think Miles is one of those heroes who wants to do every single thing themselves.
Yeah, he wants to be the one who saves the day all the time. Although he seems pretty crabby. Yeah, he's maybe rethinking that strategy at this point.
Yeah, eventually he'll rethink that strategy and delegate.
Climbs out of the tube or whatever he's in, and he stands up and he tests out the replicator. But as soon as he turns it on, it sparks. And he's got some little device, and with the device, he checks it. And he's like, oh, well, you know, seems fine. And he orders coffee double sweet. Yuck. I don't know why you would want to drink that.
Yeah, really? Yeah. Ruining coffee?
He seems happy with it, and he walks away. And as he's walking away, there's some ominous music playing, and the camera sort of scans into the replicator system. And you can see in there that there's some kind of a device that's attached to the replicator, and it's activated somehow. Like, it starts to light up and do something.
An ominous device starts flashing.
I mean, it's right at that moment that you expected to hear, dun, dun, dun. But of course you don't. Instead, we cue the theme music. I will make no comment about the lovely theme song today. It gives me time to write notes, so I'll take it.
The other interesting thing about the opening credit scenes is if you look at the space station, there's a point where it moves from left to right and one of the pylons is coming towards you. You can actually see rainbow color effects on the edge, which is like chroma interference from NTSC encoded video. This led me down a whole rabbit hole of looking up how it was originally made and edited. And it's kind of sad that this is in just converted NTSC video. And apparently it would take an awful lot of effort to convert the 35mm into Blu-ray or a better format. But it was interesting and sad to see color artifacts on the broadcast.
So this is in all of the episodes or maybe only in the ones we've seen so far?
It's going to be in all of them.
Oh, interesting. Well, not a thing I would notice. Okay. I have nothing useful to offer on this topic. It's almost like Star Trek science-y stuff. Or stardates.
Oh, okay.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, no, technobabble.
But you seem really interested in it. Okay, Quark's is a little light on business. So in an empty bar, Quark is complaining to Odo that there's been no business for 3 days.
Quark's bar, where every alien knows your name.
And Odo says it's very sad. He might have to shut down and leave. And then Odo wouldn't have to worry about him anymore. Quark says he wouldn't like that because he'd have no one to persecute. They're cute. These two are cute. They're like the odd couple.
Yeah, oh, definitely. The implication is that Quark is involved with every shady deal on the station.
Oh, yeah. I assume that he is involved with everything. I mean, for example, you know, in episode 2, we had the whole terrorist thing, and the terrorists were just making their plans right in Quark's bar. They weren't even doing it in private. So that's the place you go if you're going to make a devious plan. You just go right to Quark's.
Oh, so that may actually be deliberate then, because if you leave Quark's bar open, all Odo has to do is just watch who's going in there and who's hanging around, and you'll have, like, terrorists,
That's
Klingons.
Exactly what he does. Odo sits and watches who goes in and out of Quark's. Have you not noticed that yet? That's all he does. He has already figured that out.
I thought he was just, you know, he liked to hang out in the bar.
I think his office window might even overlook Quark's. I'm not sure, but all he ever does is watch for criminal activity.
Hey, you know,
in Quark's.
He got to the back of Quark's and turned into a rat pretty quickly. So perhaps his office is actually in the back of Quark's.
Maybe. All I know is everything happens there, and that is where Odo hangs out because all of the bad things that go on start or end there.
Well, not to give you any spoilers, but they move operations to Quark's bar in two episodes, and just the entire show then revolves around.
They could. An alien that looks like a distant relative of Morn's is sitting at the bar, and he shouts at Quark, complaining that the stew he's eating is terrible. Quark says he'll replace it, but instead he makes Quark taste it, and he spits it out, and then the dude tries to force feed it to Quark, but Odo steps in and chases the guy off.
I'm sure it's very tempting for Odo to let Quark's disgruntled patrons actually take it out on Quark.
Beat on him. No, Odo likes order.
Yeah, he has his standards. It probably violates Odo's code.
I mean, at least he's not ranting about females, so I'm
okay. Oh, there you go.
It.
That's a win.
Yeah.
And coupling.
Quark complains that his replicators don't work, and he's waiting for O'Brien to fix them. Odo says that they work perfectly on the command level, and I wrote in my notes, the one percenters.
Figures. How the other half lives.
That's right. He kind of rubs it in. And then I started thinking about, why would you go to a restaurant to get replicated food? Wouldn't all the same food be available everywhere in all of the replicators?
In theory, but I would expect that Quark's actually has custom programming.
I guess if you are visiting from another ship, it's possible that maybe you don't have replicators, or that the replicators on your ship only make one kind of cuisine, like from your planet or something. And maybe you come to Quark's to get something different. But if you live on the station, why would you get food from Quark's if all the replicators were working as they're supposed to be?
Well, I would just assume that Quark has custom software on there, so you can get really exotic things.
Well, we'll never know the answer to that.
Yeah, but surely if you got the programs, you could put them into your replicator and have those custom things.
This is my exact point.
That's a very valid point.
Odo leaves, and Quark asks the computer to show the repaired replicators in the command level. Like, he wants a map of where all the fixed replicators are. And it tells him that he doesn't have clearance. So then he opens a panel next to the computer, and he reaches into a drawer, and he takes out, you know, I don't know what they are, but they look like spark plugs. And he plugs
Computers in the future do run with spark plugs.
I'm not really into the science, if nobody could tell that yet.
Computer spark plugs are a thing.
He plugs them into the panel, and magically he's granted access.
He's a little bit of a hacker, isn't he?
I figure he just paid somebody, or, you know, it was a deal that he made with someone who owed him money for gambling, and he had these little things in the drawer for when he needed access, and now he's got it.
Surely access is logged. If it's an important system, you'd have to have access logging. I mean, aren't these people ISO compliant?
Hey, maybe it is logged, but nobody's monitoring the logs.
Ah, Odo checks the logs when he wants to pick on Quark.
We would expect, based on our own technical backgrounds, that Odo would be sitting in his office and there would be all these screens up all around him, and a red light would go on when there was some access that wasn't supposed to happen. But what probably happens is that it gets dumped into a log file somewhere that nobody ever looks at because there's 8 gazillion of them going on all the time and nobody has time.
Ah, yeah, the only person who can review them is Miles.
And on this station, and this station is probably broken, so it doesn't matter.
Okay.
Anyway, he gets the map that he's looking for. We don't know exactly why he's done that yet, but we do find out later.
It's a Ferengi, so there's going to be profit involved.
There's money involved. So next, Miles is giving Sisko a coffee from the replicator in Ops, and Sisko thanks him for finally fixing that. And he asks him if he's all right, because he doesn't look great. He's a little bit sweaty, right? Miles says that...
Oh, he's looking very sweaty.
Yeah, he says he's a bit hot because the environmental controls are acting up again. So Sisko says to send his regards to Keiko, saying that Jake says she's such a wonderful teacher. And I thought, uh-oh, have we already disappeared into the background with Keiko, never to be seen again?
Yeah, she's gone.
That was quick. She had one chance. She's out. So Miles says back to him, she's flower units about the lad herself. And Sisko's like, come again? And then he slowly says, she's quite fond of the lad herself. Uh-oh. Something's not right there. Miles wanders off looking confused.
He's experiencing autocorrect, basically. I mean, his autocorrect parameters are kind of a little bit funky there. I mean, you've seen the awesome things I've sent you on autocorrect.
Yes, that's true. But I assume that the words that came out of your mouth were not auto-corrected. So yeah, he's having some kind of a problem. I mean, maybe he's just super tired.
And sweaty.
And he's very sweaty. Now we jump to the promenade, and Dax and Kira are having a stroll. Kira's got kind of an angry walk. She just looks to me like she's sort of stomping.
Oh, she has a power walk.
She's like swinging her shoulders. Yeah, she's got a power walk.
I'm picturing the line in the script with Kira where it says, swagger.
That she walks with swagger?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that could be. People are walking by them and somebody says, oh, hello, ladies. And Kira kind of does sort of an eye roll in that person's direction. And then there's a couple other guys that walk by and give Dax a look. And Dax says that she forgot what it was like to be a female because she hasn't been one for 80 years. She says that she likes the attention. I don't feel great about this scene, I guess. Maybe I'm jumping ahead to the end here, but it feels a little awkward to me that she would say that she likes the attention. I can't speak for all women everywhere, but I always think that we're in a work environment here. I guess this is why it always bothers me when things happen like this, because I think, isn't she at work? But I guess they also live there. And if the two of them are just walking and they're not on duty.
They appeared to be off duty, but Dax does seem to be enjoying being a pretty girl. Like you say, the character is a dude written as a woman.
When you just want to be taken seriously as a scientist or whatever, the wrong kind of attention will really disturb you. I get that they're kind of trying to explain that Dax is also a guy, and she just said, I haven't been a female for 80 years. So they're kind of trying to explain it away and then saying, oh, so now I've forgotten about that, and now I like the attention. I don't feel like that's something that Jadzia, as the female host, would necessarily think.
Oh, okay.
So it's kind of like a contradiction, I guess. You've got a female host and a male Trill, and their histories are just kind of merging.
Trills don't have a gender.
Oh, right. Of course, the Trill is not the gender, but the previous gender was a male. But she remembers all of the things from that host.
So I think... Okay. Clearly, Dax has memories of having a female host before.
I'm not going to harp on this topic. I don't speak for all women everywhere, so we can move on. As they're walking down the hall here in the promenade, they run into Quarks, and it's super busy. Quarks says, hey, join the party. His bar is really hopping now.
Oh,
for
I love the
reason.
Line from Kira at this point. Did you cheat your 1,000th customer?
Yes, this is a celebration of that. What an awesome line. Yep. Quark says, no, they're celebrating the repair of the replicators. And he says, come on in and have some whipped Idanian spice pudding. Why does everything he say sound suggestive?
Because that's kind of Quark. We've already seen he like creeps on everyone. Well,
he creeps on
every woman anyway. But if you notice, first sighting of Morn in this episode.
I did not notice. Okay, very good. Kira says that she's due back in ops. She's not interested in Quark's nonsense anyway. And Dax says that she'll stay. And then she goes into the bar and Quark does this weird little fist pump, which I don't know what that was supposed to mean. Like, yes.
That manages to put her off and she leaves.
In ops, Kira notices that Miles is looking very run down. He says he's fine. She asks if it's a good time to tell him that number 3 turbo lift is down again. And he looks at her with murder in his eyes, and she says she's just joking.
That's a really bad joke, Kira.
Yeah.
I can really relate to that. That is, like, not the right thing to say in that situation.
I think she was just trying to buddy up to him, but he was not into it. He's too stressed for humor.
Yes, exactly. Being in that situation. He's very, very sweaty at this point, by the way.
He is, and he says, Major, Lark's true pepper. What?
I believe that is an old Gaelic insult.
And then he says, let birds go further loose, maybe. He's talking gibberish. Better call Bashir. He looks very sweaty. He starts sort of freaking out and backing away. And then he gets onto the elevator and leaves. Oh, you can't just let him leave. He may be having a stroke. They just watch him go and get on the elevator.
That's funny. That was my thought on this one of, is he having a stroke?
Yeah.
The other thing I was thinking at this point is, because I didn't actually remember this. This was another episode I didn't remember was, wasn't this a plot for a Twilight Zone?
I don't know. It'd make a good one.
Yeah.
Where nobody could say their words anymore.
Yeah. There was a Twilight Zone where one guy, all the words changed in his head.
Interesting.
That was quite a good one.
It's good because it's creepy.
Oh, yeah.
It's creepy that it's happened here to Miles. Fortunately, after they come back from the commercial, they're in medical. So somebody obviously did chase him down and get him to medical.
Yeah, somebody called Bashir and he said, the dude could be having a stroke.
Right.
Or he could have been speaking to Marion. Remember Darmok, the episode?
Yeah, but the things that he said made sense. They just seemed out of context. They didn't seem like they were random words. They seemed like they were maybe random thoughts.
Yeah.
They weren't just random words that didn't go together. It's just that they didn't go with a thing that was happening.
Okay, that's true. Yeah. No, yeah. Not to get sidetracked, but that was a really good, I thought, smart episode of STNG.
Julian is doing a neural imaging scan, and MRIs are a lot smaller in the future because he just has like a little thing that he's doing it with. I like that. That makes me happy because you don't have to get into a big MRI machine.
And Bashir says...
Says the claustrophobic.
Darmok and Jalad at Tangara.
Tanagra.
That's it. I have it written down and still can't get it right. I want to say Tanagra.
Oh my gosh.
Tanagra.
The computer says all brain functions are within normal parameters, and he asked the nurse to pull up Miles' neurophysiological history.
Medical technobabble.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. I didn't write a lot of it down because it doesn't really matter. Miles grabs, at least to me, I'm sorry if it matters to someone out there. Miles grabs a data pad and pounds in some words, and then he shows it to the doc, and it's also gibberish. I want to know how these pads work, because he typed in a lot of words really fast.
Oh, it's the word suggestion thing, you know, like, seriously, it's all Siri.
Like, he types in a letter and it picks a word?
Yeah.
Could be. Miles tries to leave, he's annoyed, and he's shouting some gibberish. Kira grabs him and sits him back down, and the doctor says that he's suffering from a form of aphasia, a perceptual dysfunction where the brain is just not processing things right.
That was actually quite good exposition there.
Yeah, it was good and it was brief, but I kept thinking, call his wife, people. This is a crisis. But she's apparently, they didn't pay for her for this episode.
Yeah, I checked the credits and she wasn't in it.
Oh, man. In Ops, Bashir is now filling in Sisko, Kira, and Dax. He doesn't know the cause. There's no evidence of head trauma or stroke. Dax asks if he's checked the medical library for precedents, and he says he has, but he hasn't found anything yet.
And I believe for that, Kira brings up that she thinks he's faking it because he doesn't want to be on vending machine duty.
That's not what happens. Sisko tells Kira to retrace his steps for the last 52 hours, and he tells Dax to take over the chief's duties, and now Dax's words are messed up. They all look appropriately freaked out at this point. It's spreading.
She's really good in this scene. The look on her face is just priceless.
Because I imagine something's going on in her head.
Yeah.
She starts to feel it before she says it. Yeah.
She does some really good facial acting there. She really looks, she really sells it. It's something, something's going wrong.
And they all look terrified at this point. Now we're in medical and Bashir and Sisko are talking alone. And Bashir's comparing the test results of the patients. And he's found a virus in their temporal lobes. And he shows like an image of a virus. It looks like a fuzzy dumbbell.
Yeah. They have the autocorrect virus. They have confirmed they have the autocorrect virus.
The auto-incorrect virus is what they have. That's what we'll call it. And he says that this virus imposes itself in the synaptic pathways and randomly reroutes them, which is why the words all come out wrong. At that time, two more people are brought in speaking gibberish. And I wonder, how big is this medical office? I'm not sure we have enough beds.
This episode seems a little bit too on the nose for current times.
Yes, it does. We're going to talk about this a little bit here because Sisko calls for an emergency quarantine. But from here on out, I see no evidence of any kind of quarantine. So we're going to talk about that. What does a quarantine exactly mean in space?
In space?
I guess we'll find out.
Yeah.
Well, I picture, you know, when they show us the images of cruise ships being cleaned, like people in hazmat suits are going around cruise ships and spraying. And I'm wondering, is that what it's like? Is there somebody going around in the space station in hazmat suits spraying all the surfaces?
Yeah, they didn't have the budget to show that, so.
No, they did not. They could have just shown, you know, one person doing it in quarks or something.
Oh, yeah,
there you go. It would have been all right. But now we go to the promenade, and it's bustling. And Odo finds that there's a whole bunch of people in quarks, and he says to Quark, everything is supposed to be closed in this quarantine. And Quark's like, well, everything but essential services. So apparently a bar and gambling is essential services.
I did like that. I mean, is that a little bit more hacking by Quark? Did he like hack the computers so that essential, under the essential services, there's like life support, Quark's bar?
Maybe. I mean, he says everyone is on edge and this offers a diversion. And I'm just like, I don't think we're grasping the point of a quarantine. Yes, maybe you're on edge, but if you all come together, we don't know yet, if it's an airborne virus, now you've all got it. You're all a bunch of idiots. If you actually were on the space station, would there not be a quarantine protocol where you actually enter it into the computer and the computer starts automatically shutting things down, saying, oh, no, you know, this is closed and this is closed, and it turns off replicators in certain areas to clear people out?
I'm thinking closes bulkheads, introduce biofilters, all those kind of things.
Yeah. Would that not happen? And I guess we can look at it like, so many things are broken. Perhaps that was broken, but we just issued an emergency quarantine and now we go to a bar that's full of people.
Plus, it was designed by the Cardassians, so perhaps you're also dealing with design issues here where things like that were never taken into consideration. So there's poor isolation between bulkheads and things like that. Basic design constraints haven't been followed, or Cardassian versions of them have been followed. But by the way, Morn is in the bar talking to a blue person in this scene, most importantly.
Every appearance you're going to bring him up?
Yeah, every appearance of Morn needs to be brought up.
Okay. The same alien who was complaining about the food earlier is now happy with it, saying that the stew is magnificent. Odo looks very suspicious, and Quark says his assistant, Rom, was able to fix the replicators. I thought Rom was his brother?
Yes, Rom is his brother.
And an idiot, right?
Yes.
Have we not established that? I guess we haven't established that yet, but somehow I know that, so it must be from watching it. But now Odo is even more suspicious that he's heard that story. So Jake is on the promenade, and he's up on the second level, and we get sort of a big shot of the empty promenade, right? There's nobody else there that we see.
It actually shows how large the set is here. That seems like kind of a large set. And it's quite a nice look to the whole thing.
Yeah, and we also see the vines again, and this time there's a little bit of green in the vines, so I was wondering if Keiko did have something to do with bringing the vines back to life.
Clearly, having a botanist on board has helped the vines.
Although I'm still not clear what these vines are about. I just thought maybe they were weeds growing in the station. I don't. Do we ever talk about them? No, never mind. Don't tell me. I don't want to know. Don't spoil it. Okay. No spoilers.
We'll leave the vines for the episode.
So Sisko comes in and tells Jake that he should be at home. Jake says that he was at Nog's, I believe is what he said.
Yeah, once again, we see Sisko doing that very reassuring thing. He's really good at that.
Yeah, because Jake asks if everything's going to be okay, and Sisko says that the quarantine is just a precaution and tells him to go straight home. And this happens just as that captain from earlier, Captain Jaheel, appears, and he says that he doesn't share Sisko's confidence. Sisko reminds him that visitors are supposed to be confined to their ships. Nobody listens. What is the point of this quarantine?
It's the world's worst quarantine.
Most pointless quarantine.
Yeah.
Jaheel says none of his crew is affected anyway, and he should just be allowed to leave before his cargo is ruined. And Sisko tells him,
that's
oh,
such
no,
a good idea.
Nobody's leaving. Yeah, nobody's leaving, and you need to get back to your ship. Jaheel pleads to be allowed to leave, saying he doesn't want to get sick. Then why are you wandering around in the quarantine zone?
He's totally that guy, isn't he? I mean, he's...
Yeah, he's an idiot. Now we see Quark pushing a very rickety cart down a dark, quiet hallway, and he's ordering some food from what I think is the same replicator that Miles was working on earlier, or at least it looks the same. I'm not sure it's the exact one.
They only had the budget for one replicator, so they probably just made one and then just push it around to all the other sets.
But as he orders a drink, the cart behind him, the cart that he was pushing, turns into Odo, and he's busted.
This week's Odo effect.
Yes. Odo says unauthorized access to crew quarters is a crime. So apparently we're in somebody's quarters. I think we find out later it's empty quarters.
Yeah, you've got to admire the Ferengis. They'll do anything for competitive advantage.
Well, Odo says you could have just asked to use these replicators. And Quark's philosophy is never ask when you can take, which is cute.
Is that one of the Ferengi rules of acquisition?
No, maybe. Odo says he was on to him when he said that Rom fixed the replicators because Rom is an idiot. I wrote, aha, that's what I wrote down. Isn't he an idiot?
Dissing poor Rom.
He says he couldn't fix a straw if it was bent.
Oh, that was a good line. Poor Rom.
And Quark agrees with him. So he escorts him out.
Remind me to fire him. Isn't that what he says?
So he escorts him out, although I thought he'd throw him in the brig or something, but he doesn't. He just walks him out.
Yeah.
And we go back to Ops, where Bashir is saying that he has found the virus is being ingested, so it's in the food. And Kira says it's impossible because all the replicators have biofilters to filter out viruses. But Bashir says he's tested the food on the command level and it's all contaminated. He also says that the incubation period varies, and so everyone probably has it. It just hasn't come out in everybody yet. And Kira looks really freaked out. I liked how they did that. They had to explain that.
Yes.
Because they needed some people to still be coherent for a while in order for this story to proceed. They couldn't all just suddenly drop.
Right.
So Kira says that the last thing Miles was doing before he got sick was fixing those replicators. So she heads off to inspect that site. I thought she was already supposed to be retracing his steps. I guess she retraced them so she knew that, but she hadn't inspected anything.
This might have been the last thing that he did.
Yeah, maybe she hadn't gotten to the last step.
Yeah.
Sisko suggests shutting down the replicators, but Bashir says that won't help because he's getting patients from all over the station. And they wonder how that could happen, just as Odo comes in saying, oh, you can thank Quark for that because he was using the replicator in some vacant crew quarters to make food for his bar. So that's how it spread to everywhere. Bashir then suddenly gets worried that it has spread so much that he should check an air sample. And he finds that the virus has mutated and is now airborne. And they show that picture again of the fuzzy dumbbell virus. It still looks exactly the same.
Early CGI.
Now he says the whole station is infected. All I could think was, wow, the biofilters are crap. Yet another thing that Miles maybe should fix.
Yeah, maybe the biofilters were broken.
So we have a quick voiceover so that Sisko can give us the star date. 46423.7, whatever the hell that means. And he says that nearly 60% of the population now has aphasia. Meanwhile, Kira is scanning around the inside of the replicator and she stumbles onto that device that we saw way back earlier. She pulls it out and she takes it to Sisko. We learn that the device was altering the replicated food at a molecular level. Kira says Miles must have accidentally activated it somehow, and she says it's a Cardassian device, and she says she can tell it's Cardassian because of its power source.
Now, I have to ask, why wouldn't the whole place have been gone over with a fine-tooth comb? I mean, the Cardassians could have left all sorts of nasties.
But think about the pilot. In the pilot, the place is destroyed. Everything is broken. I think they've spent more time fixing than they have inspecting or trying to improve.
Are they that understaffed?
And the crew seems small.
Yes, that could be the problem.
Because, like you said earlier, Miles is the one fixing everything. Miles in his rolled up sleeves is responsible for everything, and he's got those two NPCs and that's it. We don't really see a lot of other people.
Yeah, I would worry there would be nasties hidden all over the place. I mean, the Cardassians are pretty disgruntled when they left.
Well, what was his name? Gul Dukat from the pilot?
Yeah, Gul Dukat.
So he said in the pilot that he hadn't wanted to leave.
Right. I mean, right? It would seem to me like every system could potentially have a booby trap on it.
Yeah, they better do a big scan. Right at this moment, Bashir calls Sisko to the infirmary urgently. And we knew this was coming. Jake is there and he's sputtering nonsense. Sisko is very upset. He puts his hands around Jake's face and you can see that one of his hands is bigger than Jake's entire head. The dude is big.
Brooks is so good. He gives a really convincing performance of emotion. I mean, I think he's a great actor in this role.
Yeah, you can see that he's very upset. Jake is not great at the nonsense words, I noticed, so they only gave him one line. Bashir says they've set up a new temporary hospital ward because there's so many patients, so Sisko says he'll take Jake there. So now we go to the ward, and there's people coughing and writhing on beds. I thought everybody was just fine other than the ward thing, so this seems a little bit strange. But the funny thing in this scene is Quark is barking words at one of the patients to indicate that he's owed money. Sisko comes in and thinks that he too has the problem, but he's like, no, I'm fine. I'm just trying to get my point across. And also he thinks that maybe the people there are faking it in order to avoid paying their bills.
I like it when he says that's what he would
do. Right, exactly. Sisko says no one would be that devious. And Quark says, oh, I'm that devious.
Quark is already turning into just a great character.
Yeah, it's a cute scene.
I mean, I love the way he's hassling the patients.
He's just shouting words at them.
We're also getting some exposition here about the Ferengi having a strong immune system.
Yeah, we don't actually see any of the other Ferengi sick, do we?
No, we do not.
That's interesting.
There's Rom.
The idiot.
And
Nog.
Yeah.
Back in medical, Bashir tells Sisko that the virus is synthetic, and he says that the Cardassians didn't build it. Because they always build some distinctive thing into their DNA. Again, there's a lot of medical technobabble. He says that this was clearly made by Bajorans, which is interesting. I thought this was a really good delivery by Bashir. He made that sort of nonsense sound natural.
Yes.
I thought he did a really good job.
I mean, it's a short scene, but I think it also demonstrates sort of the quality of the acting of Bashir delivered that really well.
Yeah, it was really good.
I did like the way Sisko as well was sort of getting annoyed at him about the sort of get to the point. You know, what are you trying to say?
Oh, I didn't even notice that. Okay, that's good.
Oh, that really took me back. When you're dealing with staff of sort of you're 10 minutes in and you're like, is there a point to this?
Back to the leadership part of the podcast. Sometimes you just got to let the person get it out.
Yeah.
Although at the same time, this is different because Sisko now has a broader sense of urgency, not only because his staff is so impacted, but also because his son has been impacted. And
oh,
now that
he
knows that the virus is in the air, he also knows that he has it. So, you know, as far as we can tell, it's only a matter of time before everybody drops. So we got to get moving.
So what you're saying is he can't grab Miles, get in a shuttle and hide behind a moon before the bomb explodes.
No. Oh, God. The plan from episode two.
Yeah.
Okay. So the one piece I left out there is that Bashir figures out that Bajorans created the virus, maybe as a terrorist attack that was probably intended for the Cardassians. Now we're in Sisko's office, and Kira tells Odo and Sisko that the energy decay of the power core indicates it dates back 18 years to when the station was first built. So Odo supposes it was maybe smuggled on board during station construction by the Bajoran underground. And Odo makes sure that everybody understands that he was not in charge of security when that happened. Like, it's not my fault.
He was a little full of himself here. If he'd been in charge of security, he would have found it.
He was. Sisko wonders why the Bajoran underground would go to so much trouble of planting a booby trap and then not use it. And he asks Kira to figure out who created the virus so that they can find the antidote. And Odo says whoever created it may not have even bothered to create an antidote.
Odo is the guy who can find the cloud in every silver lining.
Yeah, I don't think Odo is familiar with how attached humans are to their children.
Well, he doesn't even know about coupling.
Yeah. Kira is now communicating with someone, saying it had to be someone in the underground familiar with genetic engineering. The woman she's talking to on the other end of the call has got crazy hair, and she says, it sounds like something Deacon Ellig may have thought up, but the last she heard, he was in a Cardassian prison, and that was 9 years ago, and she hasn't heard from him since.
We do get to see angry Kira at this point.
Yes. Yeah, she tries to press the woman to give her more info, but she just simply doesn't have any more. Yeah. Miles is running a high fever now, and Julian says that the virus has attached to his autonomic nervous system, and he's not responding to treatment. If we can't counteract the virus, he'll be dead in 12 hours.
Yes, extremely sweaty Miles.
And again, I say, where is his wife? How do we not call his wife and let him know what's going on?
Yeah, let her know later.
I mean, at least call her. You maybe don't want her to come down there. Maybe she's not infected. Who knows?
They just texted her. Yeah, Miles is sick, almost dead, very sweaty.
Sisko asks Bashir if he's made any progress on, you know, what to do about this virus. He says no, listing off a bunch of sciencey things that he tried. Nothing is working. He's also got 7 more patients with similar symptoms to Miles.
Couldn't he call Beverly Crusher?
Yeah. We should have called Crusher. Sisko tells him to keep working, saying he hopes Kira finds who's responsible. And Bashir says he'd like to meet that person because the virus is a work of genius. Great. Sisko awkwardly says, oh, I'll try to arrange that. Maybe you could just fix this freaking thing first.
He's that staff member.
Yeah.
Takes forever to get to the point and then won't stay on topic.
Yep. Kira is in ops searching Bajoran archival records, and she discovers that guy that the woman was talking about, Deacon Ellig. He was killed in an escape from the internment camp on Stardate something or other. I assume it was a long time ago. Sisko comes up on the open-air elevator saying she's got 12 hours to find some help or people are going to start dying. Kira takes a deep breath and starts investigating Deacon Ellick's death. I guess she's hoping it was a sham and that he really didn't die.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking at this point.
Yeah. And she finds that someone from the Bajoran underground signed the death certificate. This might be useful.
Yeah, knowing enough TV, that one I thought they were going to give us.
Yeah.
Oh, it's not really dead. It's just a big cover-up.
Yeah, I absolutely thought that's what was going to happen. Now we're in Quark's, and Quark is by himself. Finally, somebody's listened to the quarantine, and the place is cleared out, and it's just Quark playing with the Dabo wheel by himself.
You were asking about Dabo. This is the first scene, I think, where you see have a really good view of the Dabo table, and it is basically roulette.
Yeah. Odo walks in and Quark says he'll teach him the rules of the game because Odo says he doesn't know the rules, but he says, no thanks. I have to go to ops, but we're out of security personnel. And he tells Quark that he's personally responsible if anything turns up missing on the promenade while he's not there.
I guess Quark doesn't like it when everything will point to him.
Maybe. I wasn't really sure of the point of that scene because nothing really happened. Was it maybe just to show that the quarantine was finally working?
Yeah, I think it was also to show that Quark was unaffected.
Yeah. Now we go to medical, and Julian is still working on the disease, but now his words are getting jumbled. So now we're in big trouble. This does not bode well for everyone.
The autocorrect virus has got to Bashir.
Yep. Meanwhile, Kira has finally located the guy who signed the terrorist death certificate, and she calls him and asks if he helped Deacon Ellick plant an aphasia virus on DSN. Nope, guy hangs up. I had nothing to do with it.
I was never there at the time. It was nothing to do with me.
That may not have been the best approach to getting his help, because he's just like, nope, click.
I would guess that if you're involved in bioweapon research, you might be a little reticent to talk about it. But as it was part of the liberation effort, wouldn't you think that maybe he would be a little bit more open?
Well, I think we've talked about this before, and Kira talked about regrets that she had, and you were asking why would she regret it when she was, you know, fighting for the freedom of her country. And I think any time you've done something that maybe you wouldn't do when you're not under duress, you might regret it.
Yeah, and I guess if you were running a medical facility, it might bring your ethics into question.
It might. I mean, it might put his current job in jeopardy.
Yeah. What were you doing during the occupation? Oh, I made bioweapons.
Yeah, no biggie. There's nobody left in ops. So Sisko is asking Odo for his help, but Odo doesn't feel qualified. Sisko points out that people are dropping like flies and he doesn't have any options, so he needs his help. Then Kira tells Sisko that she found the doctor guy and he hung up on her as soon as she mentioned the virus. So clearly he knows something and she wants to go directly to him. She tries to head off, but Sisko slides in front of her saying, "You can't break the quarantine." I mean, as if she's an idiot and doesn't know that she shouldn't do that. But she says she has no intentions of stepping foot on the planet, and he still doesn't think she should go.
She really puts her foot down in this scene. I like the way she very much asserted herself and was like, "Yeah, I've got this." And Odo trusts her.
But Sisko doesn't. But Sisko doesn't trust her because he doesn't move. He's standing in front of her and he doesn't move even when she tries to get past him. And Odo says, "Hey, she's our only hope." And then Sisko relents.
Yeah.
So it took Odo to convince Sisko that she knew what she was doing, or maybe she should at least try. After she leaves, Odo says, "Let's hope there's someone here to greet her when she returns."
Well, that'd be Odo. Clearly, it hasn't affected him.
Not looking good for anybody but Odo. As far as we know, Odo is not susceptible to the virus. Or Ferengi, maybe.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. It'd just be Odo and the Ferengi.
Kira's shuttle leaves, and Sisko goes to the hospital ward to hug Jake. He tells him to stay positive because he's not going to lose him. Then he kisses his head. It's cute.
Avery is really good. He gives such solid performances in this.
He can be really flat sometimes, right? Like when he's giving an order or when he's saying something uninteresting, and then all of a sudden he kisses Jake on the head and you're like, oh.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a great emotional range and can be very convincing in these performances.
Yeah, I agree. Meanwhile, on docking port 5, Captain Jihil, remember him?
That guy. Seriously, he is that
he's
guy. Troubled.
He's had it. He's getting out of there. Sisko calls him and Jihil says he doesn't care if the docking clamps aren't released. He's turning on his thrusters. He's breaking free. We have an outside view of Deep Space Nine, and there's only that one ship visible. Even though we keep acting like the place is teeming with visitors, we only see that one ship.
Limited model budget.
Jihil refuses to relent, and he continues to try and break away from the station. He says his entire crew now is confined to the hospital, and he's leaving before he gets sick. Sisko hangs up on him and tells Odo to release the clamps, then hit him with a tractor beam. But they can't release the clamps because of the stress from the ship trying to break away.
I'd like to vote for releasing the clamps and hitting him with a photon torpedo.
Yeah, that's right. Just blow him up because now he's got the virus for sure. Yeah. They're worried that the ship will explode and take a chunk of the station with it. I mean, that's the problem. They can't release the clamps and they're worried it's going to blow and actually damage the station.
It just keeps getting better, doesn't it?
Yeah. And then they show an image of the inside of Jihil's ship and you don't see him, but you just see flames. It's like now it's on fire. Even worse, Odo now sees that Sisko isn't feeling well. He's starting to fade. Sisko calls for anyone in the station who can understand him to come to ops and help. So Odo suggests exploding the mooring clamps to push the burning ship away from the docking ring. Good idea, Shifter. That's what I wrote down.
He needs that little badge with Shifter on it.
He needs the badge. It says Shifter. Own it. Just own it. It has to be done manually, of course. Very Star Trek-y. And Sisko is now virused. He starts babbling nonsense, so he's out. And all you've got left is Odo and Kira and maybe one other.
Oh, and a classic piece of 90s television. That was the cut to the ad break right there.
Yes, yes. Kira arrives at Bajor, and she locks the transporter onto the one person who is in this room. I guess it's the office of the doctor. And when she sees that it's him, when she calls him on the communicator and sees that it's him, she beams him onto the shuttle. And he is outraged. Kira just kind of rolls her eyes and says, "Relax, you won't be gone long." I don't know how she knows that.
Don't mess with Kira. She's just going to kidnap you if you get in the way.
She's like, no big deal.
I love her directness.
Yeah. The doc asks, "Why have you kidnapped me?" And she says, "The station needs help, and you created this virus." And he says, his line is funny. He says, "I had practically nothing to do with it."
Oh, that was a good one. Yeah. Okay. We know
not
what
I had nothing.
Here.
I had practically nothing to do with it. He said he just assisted the other guy when he created it.
It looks like her gamble paid off. I mean, if this was the wrong guy, this would be really bad.
Right. He's very defensive, and she says she's not trying to place blame. She just wants the antidote. And he says he doesn't know of one. And she says, "Well, you better do something about it because she's infected." And then she stands up and she breathes close to his face. And now you're infected.
She is right in his face.
And he seems a little grossed out and he kind of turns his face away, but too late. They're both infected now. It's genius.
I'm expecting she was spitting a lot, saying a lot of P words.
I thought it was genius. I appreciate her willingness to do anything.
Oh, yeah.
This is where the freedom fighter experience comes in handy.
It further expands the Kira character here of she literally will do anything.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that Bashir wouldn't have done or something that Crusher from TNG would never have done or Picard would never have done. Go and purposely infect someone else. They simply would not have done that.
I mean, she's really prepared to take the ultimate risks.
I like it. Yep. All right. Now we're in Ops again, and Odo is calling for help, and only Quark turns up. He's the only person who's left, apparently, on the station who's not ill.
Great Quark entrance. I mean, he clearly is just enjoying this.
He's like, hello. He's like, I'll help you for a price. Odo says he needs to get to Jaheel's ship, and Quark says he'll beam him there. Can't Odo, like, turn into a rocket and get there really fast?
So that piece of exposition about the Ferengi having a strong immune system definitely came in useful.
There's a little humor between them as Quark beams Odo away. It was very cute. Again, they're the odd couple.
Oh, yeah. It was also a good opportunity for Quark to pick on Odo over the transporter.
Yes, which he does again. Yeah. Yes.
But Armin Shimerman, he really seems to be embracing this role.
Yeah.
Definitely. He seems to be enjoying it and having fun with it. I mean, his characterization of Quark is just, it's funny and at the same time isn't a clown. So he's balancing it really well. And isn't too much of a villain. He's pulling off a lovable villain.
I don't know if he's lovable, but...
He's slightly creepy. Okay, he's pulling off a slightly creepy but lovable villain.
Yeah, but he doesn't seem dangerous or unrealistic.
Oh, maybe that's Quark's skill. He doesn't seem those things, but really, he's just pure evil.
Maybe.
There's a theory there. And in true Quark style, I like the way he talks about his fee for helping. It's like everything's falling apart. It's all chaos. And Quark is, well, we'll negotiate my fee afterwards.
Yeah, he says that right when he first comes in.
It's very Ferengi.
Yep. Kira requests landing clearance, and she's a little shocked to hear that Quark is the one in ops. He laughs, but apparently he's able to help her get docking clearance because the shuttle lands. And she takes the kidnapped doc to medical, and naturally, as soon as they get there, Kira is now babbling nonsense. So she's gone down with the virus too.
That was lucky timing.
Yeah, it was very lucky Star Trek timing. The doc tells her to sit down while he goes over Bashir's notes. This part was a little too easy. He comes up with the antidote in seconds. He's like, I got it.
This is classic Star Trek. I mean, this is almost the stereotype of the Star Trek episode. We literally have 2 minutes of airtime remaining, and he comes up with the antidote.
Yes. He takes one look at the fuzzy dumbbell and goes, I got it. No problem. It's so Star Trek. It's great.
Ah, a fuzzy dumbbell virus. I know how to cure this.
I'm very familiar with the fuzzy dumbbell virus.
Even though I was only assisting and barely had anything to do with it.
I practically had nothing to do with it.
I almost wasn't there.
That's right. All right, now we have the action sequence of the week. Odo gets beamed over to wherever Jaheel's ship is docked. I think it was port number 5 or something. And Jaheel is just laying on the floor there. And Odo grabs him, pulls him out of his burning ship. Quark tells him he better hurry up because the ship is going to blow in about a minute. Odo is manually releasing the clamps and I don't know, he presses the eject button and the ship pushes away.
At this point, I think Odo should have saved time by just closing the doors and blowing the ship out into space. This idiot caused all this.
Yeah.
I don't think Odo should have bothered.
He kind of looked like he was laying in the doorway. I think he had to get him out of the way. He just picked him up and pulled him out.
Closed the door on him. It was a terrible accident. Well, it was a terrible, messy accident.
The funny thing here is when he presses that eject button and the ship pushes away, they show Quark and Ops and he's sort of panicked. And he does this weird thing where he wraps his arms around his giant head. Did you see that scene? That was hilarious.
Yes. I'm wondering whether that was, I mean, we could probably look this up. I wonder if that was scripted or if that was just a...
I'm guessing he just did that, but... Yeah, I don't know.
Also, the way Quark is just carrying on with like the passed out Sisko and just they show several shots sideways.
Yes, he's still in ops. That's right. He's just laying there on one of the consoles.
Yeah. And Quark just doesn't seem to be bothered. I guess Odo is just too compassionate, though. I mean, rescuing the captain who was that guy.
He probably wants to rescue him so that he can throw him in the brig. That sounds like Odo.
Yes.
So the ship is pushed free of the station and it blows up immediately. So, of course, Odo has saved the day. Quark frantically calls Odo and asks if he's still alive. Don't be too disappointed, Odo replies. It's great.
Yes.
And that's when Quark says he's ready to discuss his hazard pay, which really irritates Odo. Odo needs a sense of humor. He's way too easy to annoy. Quark can push the buttons with no effort.
I think that's part of the humor with Quark, that he can push Odo's buttons really easily.
Yep.
But Odo can do it to Quark as well. I mean, we like the scene earlier with the Dabo table with him saying, you know, anything goes missing, I'm going to blame you.
Right. And so now everyone is cured. Cisco is recording a station
literally
log.
Literally with seconds of the show left.
Cisco is recording a station log that the antidote is being administered across the station. And we go to ops where Cisco pats Miles on the back saying he's happy that he's back. And then he orders coffee from the replicator and he takes a sip. And I don't know, is it bad again? Was that what happened? Was that a little humor at the end that the coffee had gone back to being bad? Because then he shouts, O'Brien! It was weird.
Shout at your chief who nearly just died and is the only guy handling all these things.
Yeah.
That's some bad leadership
Yes. Well, I thought maybe O'Brien had played a joke on him, but when they show O'Brien's face, it was not a joke, clearly. He had not planned for that to happen. But yes, that's definitely not good leadership.
I guess it shows O'Brien's work is never done.
I guess so, but it definitely does not show good leadership. At that point, you got to have a little compassion for the guy. He nearly died.
I will just say that I thought that was a horrible, cheesy 90s sitcom ending.
It was.
Yeah, I think it should have finished with them, all of them laughing, and then a freeze frame. That would have made it a perfect, awful 90s sitcom.
That would have been fantastic. I wish they had done that.
Yeah, I preferred the ending of episode 2, where it just sort of went, the end. You remember
I remember. I'm trying to think where it could have ended like that here. Should it have just ended when Odo got mad at Quark? Should it have just ended there and we just assumed that everyone was fine?
I think it would have been a better ending if Cisco had just taken the coffee, tasted it, and just gone, oh, Brian. You know, almost like
if he just spit it out, that would have been great.
Yeah, sort of defeated.
Actually, I think what would have been good is if he had just, when he did the station log recording, and then when he patted Miles on the back and said, nice to have him back, it really could have just ended there. It didn't need that next scene.
Yeah. Yep. You make a much better point there. That's a much better idea.
It was so Star Trek-y to end like that. I mean, it was just, boom, fixed. Everything's fine. Yeah. Show's over.
Yes.
So now I ask the question, why was it called Babel?
Because of the Tower of Babel, the biblical story.
Can you tell us the biblical story?
No, people have to look that up.
Okay. How about, do you have an over-analysis of this episode?
Okay. I do have some points for the over-analysis. Okay. I think I touched on the first one, so I won't go into detail, which is why you wouldn't have done a very, very detailed scan of everything on that station looking for possible Cardassian nasties. Then again, I suppose this could have been really well hidden if it had been put in place during the construction of the station. So I'll concede that. The other thing I think is interesting is the virus itself. This is a virus that could cross species. It was infecting everyone on the station. So that would be humans, Bajorans, I assume Cardassians, although we didn't see Garak this week. Yeah. All these other races. So it's an incredibly adaptable virus. If this guy was really that smart, which they seem to think he was, why wouldn't you have built a virus only targeting the Cardassian genome with a long incubation period? Because then you've got the perfect virus. The Cardassians would be spreading it everywhere before they even knew they had it, and it wouldn't affect any other races. Therefore, I postulate the scientist wasn't really actually that good. He probably downloaded the plans from the internet.
Well, I suppose the fact that it was synthetic is what made it cross species.
But it would have to be a really good virus.
Well, Bashir did say it was a work of genius and he wanted to meet the guy. But turns out the guy was dead.
And if you're that much of a genius, target the single genome of Cardassians.
But also, if he was that much of a genius and built something so brilliant, then bringing in the guy who assisted you so that he could solve it in 5 seconds seems unlikely.
Oh, there's another theory there. Mm-hmm. Maybe the guy who claimed he was hardly involved at all, maybe that guy was actually the person who created the virus and he blamed it all on the doctor so it wouldn't get in the way of his career.
It's possible.
There's another theory.
It's not a bad idea.
Plus, I really think they need to get some help for Miles or stop Miles fixing the air conditioners, the vending machines. Miles seems a little overwrought.
That's the real leadership challenge from this episode, is what exactly is Cisco doing to get Miles some help at this point? He's got to ask for some more resources for sure.
Yeah, there's definitely a resource allocation problem.
Or he's got to tell Miles that he needs to use the resources that he has better.
Yes. And I think my final analysis piece is clearly Quark is some kind of hacker. We saw him messing with the computer systems and getting access that he shouldn't have. And then his bar being listed as one of the essential services. I think he hacked the computers and had that listed.
That's possible.
That's my theory there.
I see. But also, wouldn't, as part of the quarantine, you would think that docking ports would lock and they wouldn't let anybody come back in.
And actually shut the ships down or actually close the airlocks, stopping people from getting on board the ships even.
Lock all the people in the airlocks. They started the episode with somebody being locked in the airlock. Just lock everybody in the airlocks until the virus is cured.
Additional theory, perhaps he paid Quark to unlock the airlock.
With his spark plugs?
Yes. I think that wraps up the overanalysis for me.
So the other section that we normally do at the end here is talk about women in the future. And I have to say, I was very happy to see the woman willing to do anything to save the day. I quite appreciated that in Kira. I thought that was good, and I thought it made sense with her background.
Yeah, I liked what they did with Kira there. I think it did tie into her freedom fighter background of she'll do what it takes to get the job done. Yep. I thought that was well portrayed as well.
I wasn't super thrilled with the one scene where Dax was saying she liked the attention, but I'm not going to overthink that. I'm just going to let that go. I think my real concern, though, in this episode is, where the heck was Miles' wife? That doesn't make any sense that he almost died. Well, in the previous episode, she played such a, I was going to say big part, but she really didn't have a big part, but she was there. And then all of a sudden now she's nowhere in this episode.
Well, she played a pivotal role in that one, of the setting up of the school. Yeah. It also helped to give background to Miles's character. So it was strange that she wasn't in this one, but I guess they can't, you know, they had budgetary constraints,
maybe,
I'm sure.
Maybe. Okay, so that's it for the Women in the Future section. Let's go to our summary here with thumbs up, thumbs down, or neutral. What's your vote?
I am going, this is a meh episode. I'm putting the neutral thumbs in the middle.
Thumbs in the middle.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, because I think this is very much almost a cliched Star Trek episode, even though it had some good elements, and I did like the episode. It wasn't bad. It was still very meh, because I felt it was too Star Trek-y, hand-wavy of, you know, we wrap everything up in the last couple of minutes, rather than sort of building anything. That's sort of my take. Take it or leave it.
I think it's kind of half the fun of Star Trek, though, really, when they wrap things up in 30 seconds. I mean, it makes me laugh. It's ridiculous, but it's also very Star Trek-y and kind of amusing.
Yeah.
But I do agree with you. I'm kind of neutral on this episode. There were a couple things in it I really liked.
Right.
I liked the establishing of the odd couple of Quark and Odo. I thought that was adorable.
Agreed.
And I really liked Kira just willing to do anything to save the day. I thought that was great.
Yep, totally.
I kind of laughed at some of those really Star Trek-y coincidences, like how Kira was completely fine until the 1 second we didn't need her in the story anymore, and then she dropped, right?
Oh, yeah.
That was hilarious.
Well, the same with Sisko.
Yep.
The second to last person to succumb to the virus is Sisko.
Absolutely. And the fact that Kira follows one path to find this guy who could help with the virus, that happens to work perfectly, and he comes and solves it in 5 seconds. I mean, there are so many funny Star Trek-y things like that.
Right.
There are some things I didn't like, a little bit hand-wavy. I thought the thing with the quarantine was ridiculous. How can there be a quarantine that is not really a quarantine? Especially in the future, where I'm sure that there is a quarantine protocol worked into the station somewhere that you would just press a button and things would start shutting down. I thought that was a little bit weak. The other sort of coincidental Star Trek-y thing I loved was Odo saving things at the last second by releasing the clamps just as the ship explodes.
Yeah, under a minute of the episode left.
All very hand-wavy. It's like Galaxy Quest. We get down to 0 seconds.
Yeah, that is just like Galaxy Quest.
I'm wavering on what to give as my rating this week. I think I'm going to go neutral as well. I didn't think it was a terrible episode, but it wasn't a great episode. There were some, like I said, there were a couple things I liked and a couple things I didn't. I'm going to go neutral. It didn't really advance the stories a lot, and it didn't really advance the characters a lot. So I'm going to go neutral.
Agreed.
All right. I think that's it for season 1, episode 4. Come back next week for episode 5. In the meantime, if you'd like to tell us your own overanalysis of this or any episode of Deep Space Nine, or if you just want to say something nice, please email us at rebingeit@gmail.com. You can also tweet us at rebingeit.
Thanks for joining us on the Rebinge Star Trek DS9 podcast.
That's it for me.
And that's it for me.